This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 81 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Max, it happened.
It did.
It happened. It did.
It finally did. We have the NPRM from the FAA on the small UAS. And because this is just out Sunday as we record this, February 15th, David, we thought we'd do kind of a special episode and talk about what we've learned so far about the FAA's proposed regulations.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've been chafing at the bit for this for so long that it warrants maybe our initial feelings and reactions and struggles to get on conference calls. And it's been an interesting day. And I might say a pleasantly surprising day. I think everyone's come away a little bit with this sort of a deep breath and went, okay, we can sort of live with this. So what's your initial impression, Max?
Yeah, I think I agree that there were some fears that there would be some onerous rules as part of this, and there really weren't. I mean, we had reports from seemingly credible sources a little while ago that the FAA was going to require a pilot's license in order to fly a drone, and that's just not the case, as we learned. Interesting thing, though, to me is that first we had this inadvertent release of an economic analysis of the FAA's proposal. And this went up live for, well, I guess, a very short period of time and got pulled quickly when someone recognized that that was not supposed to be out there. But it gave us a little taste of what was going to be in the NPRM. And one of the things that it goes to great pains to describe, I think, is that there's a lot of economic benefit, a lot of value to this, you know, the possibilities of drones and small UAVs and, you know, all the things that we've been talking about for weeks and months here. There seems to be a really good solid recognition that the benefits are enormous. And so the FAA looks like, you know, they're as eager to get this going as all the rest of us are. They just have kind of a longer timeline than we have, I guess.
Right. But overall, it being inadvertently released yesterday gave us all I immediately pinged you. I was sort of like, did you see this? And I even fact checked it with some of our insiders about whether it looked real or not. And it sort of set the tone that, so when they did the announcement, which clearly was sudden, if anyone who listens to the show tried to get on the phone call this morning, it was an interesting experience. The FAA really wasn't quite ready, nor was the Department of Transportation. So the cat was out of the box and they decided that, you know, let's just go with it. But that being said, I think we did pretty well. My biggest surprise out of all of it was the secretary from the FAA specifically saying that if you're a model airplane pilot, you have nothing to worry about. And he mentioned this by name, the Academy of Model Aeronautics. If you follow their rules, none of this applies to you, and go back, you've been doing the right things all along, which was really a frightening thing come November or December, where it sounded like they were going to roll model aircraft into UAVs. Now, we are talking small UAVs, folks. This is 55 pounds or under, which I saw on Twitter someone described as a large emperor penguin, 500 feet instead of 400 feet. That was sort of a surprise. And, of course, a top speed of 100 miles an hour. So, and last but not least, most importantly, was line of sight. One of the things that didn't come out of this was first-person view. And that's, I guess, not surprising because it's not necessarily a mature technology, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. And, you know, before we kind of dive into some of the aspects of this that we've come to learn in the last day or so, David, maybe it'd be worthwhile just to mention that this process, this NPRM, Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, this is the standard process, the standard rulemaking process. And the way this works is the FAA proposes rules, which is what they have just done here. And then there's a public comment period. In this case, it's going to be 60 days. The FAA collects those comments and then takes another look at it. Depending on the comments, it takes that as input, as feedback to their proposal. And they may, and probably in this case will, offer some modifications to the proposal. And I don't know, that may cycle a few times. And this is where the estimates of a year or two or more to arrive at the final rule come in, because people are thinking that, you know, there's going to be thousands, if not tens of thousands, of comments and issues raised concerning this. And the FAA has to kind of stir that all in and then arrive at some rules that they think are in the best interest of everyone, not to mention safety. And then issue the final rule. So that's where we are. Another point to make is that, again, like you mentioned, David, this is for small UAS only. This is for commercial use, not recreational use. And especially, David, as you say, this is not applicable to model aircraft. That's something different.
I think I'd also like to add, and we've talked about, you and I have talked about this offline, is the FAA wants substantive comments. Try to leave the emotion out of it, folks. Take the time, read the whole proposal through, make your notes, and submit one comment with comments on everything you want to talk about. We don't want to flood them with micro comments, and we'd want this process to go smooth as possible. I guess that's my opinion on the subject, is if take the time, read it. You know, Max and I haven't digested it yet. It's going to take us a couple of weeks to digest it. Slowly work your way through it and then decide what you want to comment on and then submit it all at once. And hopefully that will maybe streamline the process. Let's show the FAA that we really want to work with them as partners, not just adversaries.
Exactly.
And I think that's the tone that I think we should try to get out across the whole industry, is they've opened the door, they've given us a good start, but let's be good partners and help them finish it. Another thing the secretary talked about was this, even though it's dealing with small UAVs under 55 pounds, they are really looking for substantive feedback on micro UAVs. That came out in the call, that they're not sure that micro UAVs, i.e. my little one that I fly around the house, needs to apply to all of the other larger quadcopters and hexacopters, etc. So if you fly a micro UAV, you might want to think how this affects you and provide comments that way.
Yeah, maybe we can talk a little bit about micro UAV. When the FAA says that, what they're thinking about is something that's less than 2 kilograms, which is about 4.4 pounds. And they talk about an aircraft that's made out of frangible materials. Now, that's a word that you don't see too often. But what that means is it's made out of stuff that when it hits something else, it kind of breaks up. So we're not talking about, you know, carbon fiber, you know, that sort of thing. So it's talking about something that's, if it does strike something else, it's not going to tend to damage it. There's also some other parameters concerning these micro UAS. They talk about the airspeed of 30 knots total. Yeah, I think, as you mentioned, David, 400 feet AGL as opposed to 500 feet for UAS, for the larger UAS. And there's some other restrictions as well. And so the FAA is kind of thinking about this concept of a micro UAS and making that a subset of this and having different requirements. But that's still kind of in the open. But David, maybe we should talk a little bit about some of the things that are in the proposal, things like pilot certification, because this is something that has been discussed and speculated quite a lot. What would be the requirements for pilots for commercial flights of UAS?
Well, and they're not going to be called pilots, for one. They're going to be called operators, which I think is fair. I don't think that someone who's flying a drone is pilot. But the FAA wants you to, as an operator, to be able to fly in the airspace and learn what it means to fly in the airspace. So they're going to require an applicant pass an initial aeronautical knowledge test and obtain an unmanned aircraft operator certificate, which will be good for 2 years and will have to be renewed. And I think that's reasonable. I mean, we're going to be all sharing the same airspace. We need to have, you should have basic knowledge. And like the director said this morning on the phone call, they started by know before you fly. That was the start of going down this path, is you need to know basic weather, basic aircraft patterns, you know, where your local airport is, what's involved with air traffic control, those kind of basic things that people who have flown or are pilots or active in the aviation community are required to know. It's not unreasonable to ask someone flying something else in that airspace to know that also.
Yeah, I agree completely. And they say that these tests, these knowledge tests, would be administered by knowledge test centers, KTCs, and that they would typically be co-located with the designated pilot examiner, the certified flight instructor, or some other designated authority that would administer these tests. So there already is a network out there of locations where you can take tests for a pilot's license, and the FAA is proposing that we use that's those same facilities, which is good because it's not really necessary, I don't think, to create some whole new bureaucracy or infrastructure to provide these tests. Let's use what's already out there. That makes sense to me. And there's also a comment that the test, it's probably something like a 3-hour kind of a test. The typical test for a pilot's license is you run 60 questions.
A 3-hour test.
Yeah. So that, that's good. I think that's fine. The recurrent test is sort of a subset of the topics that you'd expect for the initial test. And that's every 2 years for the recurrent test. So that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think they're being reasonable. I don't think they're being. And some of the other topics that they've talked about is weather, emergency procedures, crew resource management, radio communication procedures, determining the performance of your aircraft, the psychological effects of drugs and alcohol that must have been put in within the last 2 weeks after the crash on the White House.
Maybe.
Aeronautical decision-making and judgment in Air Force operations. So the basic knowledge that anybody who would be operating a machine around an airport or flying in the skies would know. All of that stuff actually was in my aviation merit badge when I was in Boy Scouts. So I don't think it's completely unreasonable what they're asking for.
And there is no mandated flight school required under this proposal. It's always an option. It's a place where you can learn the material required for the test, but the proposed rule says does not require applicants to attend flight school. There's a screening by the TSA, which is interesting. In order to be issued an unmanned aircraft operator certificate with a rating for small UAS, the TSA gets to do, I don't know what kind of a background check on you. So they have a role to play on that, I guess, looking for any security threat assessments for any of the applicants for the pilot certificate.
Again, given these days, not unreasonable. And most people will pass it with flying colors. So
now in the manned world, there's a requirement for a medical. And here we see in this proposal, not really. There is the presumption that if you are applying for a certification, that you are also certifying that you have no physical or mental condition that would interfere with the safe operation of a small UAS. But there's no requirement for a medical examiner to sign off. You sign yourself off in that regard. So that's different than the case for manned pilots. There's also the requirement, David, for a visual observer. Most of what we've been hearing about is the pilot requirements, but there is a requirement in the FAA proposal here that there's also an observer who can assist with watching for the development of unsafe situations, other aircraft, other people, whatever that could impact the safety of the operation of this commercial UAS. So there's also that. I don't know what the requirements are, if any, for the visual observer. We'll have to take a look at that, look at the NPRM a little bit more deeply.
Yeah, but that, again, I mean, if you're flying commercially and you're doing and you're focusing on getting the right shot of the piece of real estate, having somebody else observing the airspace around your vehicle is not a bad thing. And
right.
I know many of the people who are now doing this as a business and stuff always have a second observer to keep their eye on the aircraft. So the next big thing, and this was going to be a big challenge, was registration. Section 10789 would require each small UAS operator to be registered with the FAA and listed in the aircraft registration database in order to operate within the national airspace. Registrations must be renewed every 3 years. A $5 registration fee to any owner of any aircraft. So it's cheaper to fly your drone than it is to operate a car here in Pennsylvania. but there was something really interesting that came out of this. Was the next comment was, maintenance and inspection, they're not going to require that to be certified.
That's right. The way we read this, I think it describes that you'd be expected to do a pre-flight inspection, things that would normally be required to do before you launch to fly safely. But also, it sort of speaks to the fact that manufacturers in their owner's manuals have directions or guidance concerning maintenance and how you maintain and keep your aircraft safe. And I think what the NPRM does is basically say you have to follow the manufacturer's recommendations, which is a completely different sort of thing than having to have, you know, maintenance performed by certified mechanics who sign off on, you know, that's the whole thing that you do with manned aircraft. And so we don't see that here. Another aspect of this, though, that was of some concern was whether or not, and this is associated with maintenance and inspection, is flight worthiness of UAVs and having to, you know, have that certified. And I don't think we see that in here. So that's a burden. That was some cause for concern among some who look at the manned aircraft world and see how the determination of airworthiness is a very involved, complex process, takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money, and we see that has not really translated over to the small UAV world.
And actually, the secretary did address that on the phone call today about he knows that, you know, it could take 3 years for a company to certify a new UAS.
Mm, yes.
Right? And his comment was, after 3 years of getting it certified, it might already be obsolete given right. The way the technology is changing. So good to the FAA to recognizing that this is a very fluid environment. So I'm good with that.
Now, there's a number of things that the FAA considered but did not include for a variety of different reasons in their proposal. And these are kind of interesting. The first one is that the FAA had considered allowing small unmanned aircraft to conduct external load operations and tow other aircraft or objects. That's not in here. That's not allowable in here. The FAA also considered whether they were going to take small UAS and subdivide them into different categories of unmanned aircraft that would be regulated differently based on weight or operational characteristics, the operating environment, and so forth. We'd seen and talked about in the past the proposals that would do that. The FAA decided, no, it's just one group. It's just one class.
And then, of course, we were talking about the mitigation of the small UASs or the micro UASs. And this is trying to break out a small segment of probably something that hardly would fall into the commercial airspace. I mean, 4.4 pounds, frangible materials, could not exceed 30 knots, no higher than 400 feet, and always flown with a visual first-person, visual line of sight, not first-person view.
This is kind of like the toy category.
Yeah.
At least that's kind of how I interpret.
Yeah, and I think this is how everybody who goes and buys one of the helicopters that's in the mall. I mean, and unfortunately, it rules me out because I would have to maintain a distance of 5 nautical miles from any airport. And considering I'm less than a nautical mile from the airport, I'm not allowed to fly anything around here.
Another thing that the FAA considered was first-person view, and that's out. First-person view under these regulations is not yet allowable. I like the way they stated that. They said that the FAA considered proposing that a UAS operator be permitted to exercise his or her see and avoid responsibilities through technological means, such as onboard cameras. That's first-person view. So that's not in here.
It doesn't mean it's not coming, folks. So don't.
Right, right.
But yeah, I mean, it's the one thing that I think everyone's going to step back and go, but what? And it doesn't mean they're not going to consider it. I think they're just considering it that the technology is not as mature as everything else is, and I think they want it. They want a clearer sense of what it is before they move on it. So,
and to kind of go back to our comments on submitting comments, if this is an area that you have a great deal of interest in, let's say, and so your feedback to the FAA wants to concern this issue of first-person view, you know, you want to make a strong case. You want to look at the proposed regulations and look at what they try to accomplish and how they go about doing that. And then don't just say, you guys are idiots, you know, you should have first-person view because I want first-person view. Make a case for it. Describe it in a way that makes it consistent with the other approaches that the FAA has taken. You want to blend something in. It's not going to happen just by shouting that that's what you want. But that little editorial comment there.
Well, but no, I think that's, we're allowed to editorialize. We're commentators, not news reporters.
It's our show. Well, let's see. What else, David, did the FAA think about but not go forward with? Night flying.
I think that's the big one is sun goes down, so does your drone. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Don't fly at night. I know there's a lot of people who like shooting fireworks. Don't do it, or don't do it commercially. So that might change over time also. But, and again, like Max's comment about first-person view, if flying at night is absolutely necessary and you think you can do it safely, you need to prove it to the FAA and write a detailed proposal on why flying at night is a necessary operation.
Let's see. The FAA also considered whether the height or altitude limit should be greater than 500 feet AGL. They decided not to go above 500. And we all already talked about airworthiness. They looked at different kinds of requirements for airworthiness and haven't incorporated that at this point.
So I think on that, I think we're running long. We've got, are you shaking your head at me?
Yeah, I'm shaking. No, we got 5 more minutes.
So overall, Max, I think it was a good day for us in this industry.
Yes, I agree. I think that a lot of people were concerned that when we saw this, we were just going to sigh and go, they've killed it. It's, you know, it's not going to work under these constraints. This sounds and looks a lot more like a plan that's been thought out, that's directed towards achieving the benefits of unmanned aircraft that we've all been talking about. And now, really, the ball's in our court, as we said before, to take a look at this, put some good thoughts into it, and provide the feedback to the FAA. And we'll put some information in the show notes about how to do that, where you can find the NPRM. Essentially, you want to go to regulations.gov. There's instructions there. The key is the docket number. And the docket number for this is FAA-2015-2015-0150. That's the key to finding the information about this, including the actual NPRM, and also how you submit comments, which can be done electronically. You can fax them. You can use snail mail if you really must. But the directions are all there, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes.
So, in other words, if they want to do this, what we recommend you do is go to the UAVDigest.com/81.
Yeah, don't forget the .com, though.
Oh, that there's a reason why he does that every week and not me. And besides, it's Sunday night and we're not used to recording I guess we are used to recording on Sunday nights, aren't we? We did it for a very long time.
Yes, we did, but not recently. So that's our episode for sort of a special episode. We'll have the normal end of the week episode as well, but we wanted to bring this to you right away. We invite your comments. Want to thank you. This has been episode 81. You can, as David says, find it at the uavdigest.com/81. And you can find us on all the usual online places as well. Right, David?
Yeah, find us on Twitter, which was on fire today, which is UAV Digest at UAV Digest, on Facebook /UAV Digest, and I think we'll leave it at that. And we'd like to thank our listeners. It's been a fun ride, and considering it's almost been 2 years since we came up with this little project and a year and a half, it was worth the wait. I got to admit, it was worth the wait, and I'm glad we got something that we can work with. So on that note, I'm going to say it's cold here, and this is David in Philly.
And this is Max in equally cold Hartford.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Friday.